at twice being treated as guinea pigs, had to be repressed because of occupation policies. With the return of the full sovereignty to Japan in 1952, a flood of political, scientific, medical, and historical information suddenly became available, enabling journalists, researchers, and scholars for the first time to see the experience of survivors in historical perspective and global context. Gradually, they came to be aware that the main motive for the atomic bombing was political rather than military, to impress the Soviet Union and to force Japan to surrender before the Soviet Union could enter the war. They did not see it as a military necessity, as stated by a well-known American myth that bombs shortened the war. These points were supported by the U.S. Strategic Bombing Survey, as well as the views of other generals like General Eisenhower and several others, I can't remember their names, and later by historians. The survivors saw themselves not as sacrifice on the altar of peace, but as a pawn in the opening move of Cold War. Some survivors were able to conceptualize and articulate the meaning of nuclear weapon as a threat to planetary survival. This ability enabled them to transcend their own personal tragedies and to become committed to the mission of warning the world of the danger of nuclear age. They were convinced that humanity and nuclear weapon could not coexist, and that no human being should ever have to repeat our experience of the inhumanity, illegality, immorality, and cruelty of atomic bomb. These visionary survivors empowered other survivors to become activated and to be the core of Japan's powerful peace movement. That's the end of my written speech. So I will. Thank you. I think I have some time. I'd like to just speak. Can I?
Yes.
Do I have time?
Yes.
Okay. I'll just talk this time. In 1954, where I finished university in Hiroshima, and I came to Virginia, your country, on scholarship. And within a couple of days, I was interviewed by the press, and I was asked to talk about my feeling about what was happening in the South Pacific and in Japan. This is about the testing of the biggest hydrogen bomb at the Bikini Atoll. You know about the total chaos at that time. That was April 1945. August of that year, I came to United States. And I was rather naive, fresh out of college, and I honestly shared my opinion that continuing testing in the South Pacific was doing more harm to humans and animal environment, and Japanese were suffering from lack of sushi and sashimi and all that. Anyway, I gave critical opinion about U.S. testing. And lo and behold, following day, I started receiving unsigned hate letters. They said, we Japanese deserve that because we were sneaky at the Pearl Harbor. And those bombs did a good job. They are good bombs. Those things were the content of the letter. I was frightened. Within the few days of being in the United States, this was the welcome I received. I had to think. I had to do soul searching. What do I do? Do I put the zipper over my mouth and pretend I know nothing about Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Or bikini. It was a very traumatic week for me, but I was able to come out of that experience with stronger commitment that it is my responsibility to share my memories of what we experienced. I was very disturbed to see many young people just echoing President's narrative. Bombs were necessary. The war had to be ending as quickly as possible. I felt people were not giving any serious thought. There was no serious thought, no moral sense, just it was okay. It was good bond. I think that idea of good bonds was deeply penetrated into the psyche of American people. And I think that influenced your government, a continuing development of the weapons and rushing into the nuclear arms race. There is definitely relationship between the justification of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the later development of nuclear weapons. Well, I couldn't go back home. I just arrived. How do I live? I have to study. I have to know more about the meaning of what I experienced in Hiroshima. So I desperately started reading, and one person's writing, which really helped me greatly, was Professor Richard Falk, international law specialist at the Princeton University. And that really helped me to organize my thoughts in a legal, moral way. And I want to share that with you. 5 minutes? Okay. He said this, the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were viewed as contribution to the ending of a popular and just war. Therefore, they have never been appraised in the necessary way as atrocities. They have never been understood as they certainly would have been understood had Hiroshima and Nagasaki been located in an allied country. Somehow, we've got to create that awareness so that Hiroshima is understood to have been on the same level of depravity and in many ways far more dangerous to us as a species and as a civilization than was even Auschwitz. This kind of writing he does, that was a tremendous help. Now, after a year in Virginia, I went to University of Toronto in Canada, and I saw different culture, different people. They view the nuclear issues belong to Americans and Japanese, not to them. Without realizing, the Canadian scientists were involved in the Manhattan Project, and it was the Canadian uranium which was used for the bomb which exploded above me. And the Prime Minister of Canada wrote in his diary that he was glad it was used on Japanese, not on the white race of Europe.
Shame,
yes. They didn't know. I had to tell them, and that shocked them. But anyway, it's interesting. The same thing hit their different perspective about the nuclear age. The people's perspective in Japan, in the United States, and the Canadian. Canadian feel it's the problem between United States and Japan, not to realize it was a universal problem. This is a problem which applies to everyone on the planet. Well, the time, right? Wow. I just mentioned. Sorry. I was told the time is up, so I have to stop here. But we can have this party.
And we have time for Q&A.
I feel so humbled by your testimony. I am having a little trouble here.
Well, could you speak up?
I feel so humbled by your testimony. I'm having a little trouble myself. I wanted to say that there was at least one journal that was not confiscated and burned, and it is written up in novelized form in a book called Black Rain. And that book is written by someone whose name doesn't really compute with me, and so I can't remember it. Perhaps the speaker knows who wrote that.
Black Rain, yes. That was published years later.
It was published years later. And
after the occupation ended.
Yes, I know, but there actually was a journal that it's based on, a real journal, although it was novelized. And can you give us the name of the author?
Can't remember.
Issue?
Very well known man from Hiroshima. That's right, Ibuse, that's right, we had the specialist there. Yes, Mr. Ibuse.
Ibuse.
Ibuse, yes.
IBUSEJI. Black Rain.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for your very powerful personal remembrances. I have two questions, and that is, I have read, but I haven't read a lot, and maybe you could help me find out where I can read more, about a purposeful dietary program for the survivors of seaweed and other sorts of you know, foods, natural foods, that assisted them in their recovery of radiation. If you know anything about that, have you read anything about that?
No.
Okay. And then my second question is, after such a horrific experience in Japan, how the heck did your government sell you on the nuclear power plants?
How did the government
sell you on nuclear power?
Well, to answer that, you have to know the political relationship between Japan and the United States. You know, Japan has a peace. Well, I think in early 1950, no, that was 53, right, when President Eisenhower introduced that idea at the UN. And, you know, it's interesting. I was living in Hiroshima at that time. I saw the American government employee, official, living in Hiroshima at that time, played a major role in promoting the use of nuclear energy. And I thought, gee, this is interesting. Anyway, maybe that was part of the function. But anyway, when Atom for Peace was introduced, people and the government were euphoric. Finally, they would have the access to, endless access to energy. So they were euphoric, and the government, without having the public debate, just went ahead, made a decision, and established 54 plants. Now, you have to remember the fact that Japan, by constitution, is not allowed to arm itself. Therefore, Japanese government decided to depend on U.S. Nuclear umbrella. That means Japan is, unfortunately, so subservient to the U.S. policy. That is really the source of much of the problem, whether it's a nuclear weapon or nuclear energy. It's a big problem.
I've been attending memorials here since 1974, and one of the Hibakusha who lived around here, Hideko Tamura, Tammy Friedman, was a regular...
Hideko Tamura? I know her. She came to the same school with me. Wow. In Hiroshima. I spoke to her last week.
Oh, great.
She's in Oregon.
Great. In 1974, we had the Shadow Project, where we, after Robert Lifton's articles talking about the shadows that were left, we had people lie down on the sidewalk, and we drew, homicides, we drew chalk circles around them, and it was pretty moving. And we did it as kind of a regular thing, and Heideko was a part of that. Anyway, I was just hoping you knew her. We'll talk to her later about her. Her story is, if anybody is familiar with the late Studs Terkel's book, The Good War, Heideko's story is in there.
Speak up.
Heideko's story is in Studs Terkel's book, The Good War. Along with other radiation victims. I work with the Alliance of Atomic Veterans, and there are about 250,000 GIs in the United States between 1945 and 1963 were used as guinea pigs in bomb tests and 200 atmospheric weapons tests. And I wrote a couple articles for the Chicago Reader about that. So I'd like to talk to you a little more late about that. Most of them have passed on. Yeah, and their stories are not well known, but they were very much a part of the anti-nuclear movement and a part of the peace movement here. And they were incredible fighters. Went out to the Nevada test site to do demonstrations, and they did civil disobedience out there. So I'm just hoping to connect that one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I just want to add just the deepest also thanks to you, Setsuko Thurlow, and that you probably may have heard or you know this, that there was a group of folks in our area that tried to organize an effort to nominate the Hibakusha. Actually, there have been a number of these efforts to nominate the Hibakusha for a Nobel Peace Prize as a whole group.
Wow.
And because the truth, whether or not the, you know, it got pretty far, the effort that arose up in our area, it made a good headway, but, you know, not, they didn't quite vote for it, the committee. But anyway, that's just to say that there are really countless of us in this country, and I know around the world, who really know in the cells of our being that it is you and your brother and sister Hibakusha who are the spiritual and moral force of awakening, you know, of the rest of us to abolition of nuclear weapons and now nuclear power too. And so we just want to take a moment to thank you very much, and we know it's not easy, but thank you. And I do want to just add one thing to the woman's question about nuclear power in Japan. I happened to read that when the Hiroshima Peace Museum was opened, at the inaugural ceremony, the U.S. Embassy spent, I think it was, $1 million, which was a lot for those days. This was in the early 50s, to put a nuclear reactor core, you know, not yet used, but actually in the in front of the museum, this Adams for Peace. So, it was, so there would be so many Hibakusha there, so this is right in Hiroshima, the Peace Museum. The museum, you know, how could they object, you know? So, I mean, the propaganda is intense. And the U.S., the very first reactors were in Japan, were Westinghouse, I believe. And they were installed the same way in this country. Oh, you know, we'll fix your roads, we'll build schools, and so on. And meanwhile, the people and the fish die, and so on. But it's a very sad story. But it's unfortunately a lot in our hands. And as Mrs. Thurlow was saying, the political domination, military domination from the U.S. towards Japan is a major, major piece of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to join my thanks to you, Setsuko-san, and honor you for your great courage to tell us these hard stories, true stories. To me, your presentation takes us to the very, very heart of our nuclear work. We have heard many facts and figures. We've seen on this screen charts all kinds of horrifying things. But our emotions are what count, because our emotions, not our brains and the facts they hold, are what lead us into action that is so deeply felt we can never, never stop. I've been part of Never Again campaign from Hiroshima for many years. I would like to take every person who is pro-nuclear into the Hiroshima Memorial Museum with me. I've been to Hiroshima 4 or 5 times. I can't stand it, but I can't stay away from it. And I just thank you from the bottom of my heart for keeping us with a moral compass.